The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now we're going to talk about a sporting book, but not a sporting book, because although its theme is sport, there's another theme running right through it. It's called The Last Ditch, subtitled How One GAA Championship Gave a Sports Writer Back His Life. That sports writer is Eamon Sweeney. Good morning and welcome.
Thanks, Pat.
Now, it's an extraordinary book. You did not write the book that you were commissioned to write. Explain.
I was commissioned to write a book which was a follow-up to The Road to Corker, which is a book
20 years ago.
20 years ago. And the editor rang me about doing a follow-up, which would be a pretty conventional book about you go around, you go to the matches, you do a kind of a weekly thing. And I did it. And as the day I finished it, the final game, which was the ladies' football final, I met with her and she said, well, how did it go? And I went through it. And just as I was going as a parting shot, the way, you know, when you're Irish, you like to have a bit of a zinger on the way out the door, I said, you were very lucky to get that book, I said, because I had no intention of writing it when you commissioned it. Because when she commissioned me, I'd been kind of laid low with this kind of travel phobia and generalised anxiety, which meant I hadn't ventured away from home for years.
So you're sporting life was looking at the telly,
basically. Yeah, and had been for several years. I'd suffered these kind of series of atrocious panic attacks. It was actually so bad at the end I couldn't get a bus from Skibbereen to Clonakilty. I hadn't been abroad in 21 years. I hadn't been on a boat in 20
so
years.
So any form of transport, any form of travel at all.
I know, and now it sounds it sounds ridiculous, but it was incredibly debilitating.
But it was agoraphobia. I mean, could you walk down to the shops, for example?
I could go to the shops. The shops were grand as long as a car was an ordeal, but I could make it. But basically everything was terrible. I would decide to get a bus to Cork. I would get on the bus. I would get off the bus before the bus left. I would buy a train ticket. I would walk down to the platform. I would turn back.
There's a vivid scene in the book where you're getting on a train and the doors are open still. And then the announcement comes, you know, the doors will be closing or whatever. We're about to depart. And you jump off the train.
This was 10 weeks before I was commissioned to do the book. I had kind of battled back and got back to doing a bit of travel. And I was getting a train from Galway to Limerick. And whatever it was, I got on, I got more panicky, I got worse and worse and worse. And I literally, leaped out of the train as the door was closing. And in a shocking state.
You're covered in sweat.
I was covered in sweat, but my clothes were, my face was crawling, my heart was up to, 170 or something. And I'd always had this fear that in the end it would tip me over the balance into, psychosis. And this was the closest I'd ever been to it.
That if the train had taken off and you were sitting there, that you might have lost it.
Yeah, that I might have completely lost it. And to be honest, even when I got off at the platform that day in Galway, I think it was pretty comprehensively lost. I remember being there thinking, this is, I've finally gone over the edge, and I kind of managed to calm myself down to get home. But when I got home, and this is 10 weeks before I was commissioned to the book, I said, that is it. I've made the effort. I'm never going anywhere again. Seriously, I have my, the line out of I'm a Rock by Simon and Garfunkel, I have my books and my poetry to protect me. I'm just here I stay, And,
so you're commissioned to do the book, which, in theory, you're fascinated by. Why not? You're an avid watcher of pretty much all sports, but particularly GAA, hurling and football. So you want to do it, but in your mind, you don't think you can do it.
Oh, I don't think there's a hope doing it, to be honest. I actually avoid the editor for about a month. And my daughter told me this is called ghosting someone and thought of all kinds of conditions and things, But eventually my daughter said to me, Dad, you have to do this. I said, it's the ultimate admission of defeat if you don't do a book that you'd really love doing, because this'll finish you off. So I thought, well, okay, one final belt at this,
So what was the baby step that got you travelling again?
Well, I went to a doctor. Yeah. I went on medication. I went to a counsellor, to a psychologist. And then I started, the baby step was getting the train, I got some buses. I got back on buses. And the thing that got me travelling actually was I went to Galway over the Christmas, and I spent, I went about three times to Galway Railway Station, bought a ticket, turned back. And on the final one, I turned away and I walked across Eyre Square and I said, well, that's it. You're never going to get the train. Ring up the publisher, give them back the money. And just as I was doing that, I had this brainwave. I said, maybe it's Galway Railway Station is freaking me out. Maybe if I go to a rural station, which is quieter, and do it. So I got a bus and walked out to a rural station in Ardrahan.
Yeah,
which was like one of those rural halts.
This is like something from the Wild West. I mean, literally. Like, it's a ghost town. There isn't a sinner on the road.
There's not a sinner. With apologies to people, if anyone's listening from Ardrahan, it might well be, you know,
thriving
Galway's equivalent to Las Vegas. It could just have been having a bad day when I was there. But I spent half an hour looking for someone to tell me where the station was.
I mean, even a tractor didn't stop for
you. I was flagging down tractors. I mean, that was where I was got. I probably looked a bit harassed, I suppose. I was kind of, you know, a big shaven-headed lad in a leather jacket flagging down tractors in the middle of the day. So eventually they told me, it's out of town. It's out of country road. There's not even a footpath, and I get out there, and it's deathly.
You didn't expect to find it because you thought that the sign is pointing the wrong way.
Yeah, I discovered it. Actually, somebody contacted me, writing the book, and said you missed the shortcut, which is what people always say to you in Ireland. But and I'm there, and I'm, you know, the kind of signs are creaking in the background, and you know it's like the start of High Noon.
You want tumbleweed to be rolling down the street,
literally. And the train comes along, and I say to myself, well, this is you know, you either get on this or you face the walk back into Ardrahan. And I got on, and this time the thing closed, and I stayed on, and as the train moved off towards Crockwell, I almost felt the thing falling away from me. You know, I thought, Jesus, I'm on a train and nothing terrible is happening. And you know, the first few weeks of the championship were, you know, I still wasn't too sure I was going to get it. The very first day I did, I got a shocking panic attack going to Páirc Uí Chaoimh. But as time went by, you know, it got better. So in a way, the making of the book was kind of, this was entwined.
Was
with
your
it.
Journey to, towards
yeah.
normality?
And I'm not a kind. I'm not a kind of a very kind of great person for self exposure or something. I had no intention to write about this, but when I said it to the editor, she said, "Well, Sir Raymond, that's part of the story, and maybe people would be interested in it." So then it kind of just came tumbling out, you know.
And obviously, since you hadn't been travelling for the past few years, you were arriving at the redone Páirc Uí Chaoimh, which you probably hadn't seen.
No,
was that what gave you the panic attack?
maybe that was it. Well, everything was entirely different everywhere I went. You know, because my kids were laughing at me that I was, you know, I'd hear some song and I'd say, you know, oh, you should listen to this song. I've heard this great new song today, and they said that was out 5 years ago, and everyone knows it. So it was really like a journey almost into my own past as well. I literally hadn't. I think I'd been to Dublin at the height of it once in 5 years, you know.
Now, you take the opportunity, as you frequently do in your columns as well, to kind of riff on things. And you might bring me back to you're staying in Rathmines on the day of the final and you are meditating on religion.
Well, I don't know about meditating on religion, but yeah, one of the things I got interested in was that Dublin has changed obviously massively since I was here as a student, and I lived there in the 90s as well. And one of the things that really interested me was to kind of meet people or to witness kind of people from other cultures here. And for some reason, it struck me that one of the ways to do that was to go and see where people worship, yeah. go to church, whatever. So yeah, I went to the Romanian Orthodox Church. I went to the Syriac Church of the Jacobites, which is a kind of an Indian kind of a Christian church. And on the day of the hurling final, I went up to the Russian Orthodox Church in Harold's Cross. Mm. And it was an incredible experience because I always loved Russian literature, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, so on. They're always, you know, like looking at the icon screen and, you know, it's a whole thing there. And to actually witness it was an extraordinary thing.
But you recall the rumble of the rosary, you know, which used to be commonplace in Irish households.
Yeah, that's the thing. I always remember that as a kid going downstairs staying with my grandparents, and you'd wake up in the middle of the night and everyone would be there, you know, telling the rosary. My father used to always say to me that the thing you could never explain to anyone who didn't grow up in the 50s was how omnipresent religion was. And though it wasn't maybe omnipresent when I was growing up, I think it's the biggest gap between me and my children.
There was always something when the women were leading the rosary, say, one of my aunts or whatever, it would be articulated perfectly. When my father was leading the rosary, it would be like a buzzsaw.
yeah, gathering pace as it went along, yeah. You know. Oh, yeah, and actually, it was even more incomprehensible down in my mother's parents' house because they were saying it in Irish, you know. So it was a very odd thing to get up in the middle of the night as a six-year-old and see this ritual, you know.
Now, looking back on the sporting year that was, the two championships, the senior hurling and the senior football, now you do, of course, cover the entire season. But it was a vintage year for hurling.
It was the most magnificent hurling year. I mean, there was kind of, you know, masterpiece after classic. I mean, I went to a game between Cork and Limerick in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, which kind of set it rolling because everyone thought Limerick was supposed to turn up, win easily, and Cork would be knocked out and that would be that. And the game was just unbelievably enthralling. Every minute, every second of it, there was no lull.
And that rivalry has intensified this year.
It has intensified, yeah. And then the semi-final between Cork and Limerick was better again. The final between Cork and Clare was probably the best final ever played. And now it continues. We're after having last weekend probably the best Munster final I've ever seen. I mean, it's just this golden age. Yeah.
What do you think of the penalties, by the way? Because I know it's a big talking point.
I think it's a terrible idea. I think it's an awful idea. I think it would be magnificent to be here and we'd be talking about what to expect from the replay. Because it's denied us that. And it just seemed very, very unsatisfactory. I mean, I didn't think either team deserved to lose.
I mean, there are all sorts of alternatives, like doing sideline balls from different distances, you know. And
it's a really odd one. Or even, let's say right, lads, we'll do another 5 minutes and first team to score a point wins or something. It just seems unfair.
This would be the golden score, the sudden death.
It's not so bad because it's the Munster final and they're both in it. But if we get to an All-Ireland final or semi-final or quarter-final and a team gets knocked out on those, you'd feel very, very sorry for the guy who's going to miss there.
And they are, of course, talking about a review now as to whether or not replays.
Jarlett Burns is talking about a review. The thing I also like about Jarlett Burns is that he's very truthful. There's all this stuff about the hurried season is because we want to sort the club, give the club space and so on. But Jarlett Burns actually said in his interview, well, I'd love to change it, but I can't because Croke Park is booked in for concerts in 2026.
Well, that's honest, yeah.
And Jarlett Burns is a very honest man.
I mean, I heard various contributions during the week about how you could actually have gaps. So you played the club games that need to be played in gaps in the championship season. However, it was suggested then that managers wouldn't release their senior players to their clubs for those gaps in case they got injured.
Well, it came about because we had real nonsense, kind of the power of inter-county managers. I remember a fixture being held up in Cork one time for 6 weeks because there was a guy involved who was a sub on the hurling panel and wasn't even getting a game. So managers did kind of bring that upon themselves. But the current thing is terrible. It's hurried, you know.
Too hurried, yeah.
Too hurried. You haven't time to catch your breath.
And yet
you're
the
into
idea
the next
of
thing.
Togging out in early December for a match, for a club match, is not enticing.
I suppose, to be honest, it's easy for me to talk about it because no one's going to make me talk out in early December.
Now the hurling was great. Football, much less so.
Football was fascinating because what happened, football had been getting worse and worse and people had begun to dislike it more and more and the crowds were worse and the game, and there was a few hardy souls that said, no, it's not getting worse, it's evolving. But in fact, it wasn't evolving, it was just awful. And I think what summed it up for me, there was a game between Kerry and Derry which might have been the worst sporting fixture I've ever seen, the most boring match of all time.
But they play keep ball.
Basically, and there was blanket defence and the thing was slow and a woman from Derry got up behind me at one stage and shouted, come on Derry, bore them into submission, and that was the level you were at. And what saved it was that it got so, it's like the kind of, you have to be at rock bottom and admit you've got a problem. It got so bad that when Jim Gavin and his football review committee announced their idea that you could bring in lots of rules to make it more attractive, normally the GA does not like change. This time they fell upon it like wolves. Yeah. They were like, oh yeah, you know, yeah, get
they
it.
Didn't go for the change in the goal, the scoring, the points for a goal. But I was thinking when that change was suggested by Jim Gavin, that rugby used to be, what, 3 points for a try and 1 point for a conversion, and now we're 5-2. It evolved upwards.
And sports have always done that. I mean, my father used to say you could remember the time in rugby you could kick the ball out on the full anywhere on the pitch and the game would basically consist of the ball being slogged out over the sideline in the muck and teams would win by 6-5 or 7-6 in international. So all sports have done this. I mean, soccer got rid of the passing back to the goalie. And the great thing is football now, played properly, turns out to be a smashing game, you know. Not as good as hurling. I mean, anything is going to look terrible next to hurling. Yeah. But football is, it's not so much the ugly sibling anymore.
I've made a suggestion. No one listens to it, of course, because what do I really know about sport? But that the goal in soccer, for example, is now too small. That keepers are so tall compared to the way they used to be, and players generally are so tall, that you're going to get very low scoring games all the time because the keeper has mastery of the goal mouth.
It could be true because, of course, guys are... I saw actually someone suggesting today that in hurling, for example, the scores are now incredibly high because the slither is lighter, the hurl is better, and the players are much fitter, so that maybe that's changed the nature of that itself.
The other idea I have is that you put a bar across the top of the two posts and you've got to get it in that pocket rather than, was it a point or was it not? Let's talk to Hawkeye. Whereas if it goes into that square above the goal...
You'd have to put it at a ferocious height, though, because, I mean, I've seen guys, you know, clear even the top.
But
even
no, the top it just means that they have to be more accurate. They have to hit it to a certain height. It would improve the skill level no end and reduce the scoring.
You should patent this, but you should apply to Croke Park.
Anyway, you're travelling again. You actually took an overseas trip.
I did. I went to when I finished the championship season. I went to Paris. First time I'd been abroad in 21 years. And when I finished writing the book, I went to Amsterdam, and it's just tremendous, you know.
Well, it's a fabulous book, not only for the sports fan, but I think for every general reader. It's called The Last Ditch: How One GAA Championship Gave a Sports Writer Back His Life. It's published by Hachette Ireland, and Eamon Sweeney, its author. Thank you very, very much for joining us in studio.
Thanks for having me.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.